Hey yo, what's up world? This is DJ JS1 of the legendary Rocksteady crew. And right now, you're listening to The Library with my man, Tim Heinenkel, on rapstation.com. Strictly the real hip hop. Peace.
Heart for the aerosol art. I'm a writer, not a fighter, man. I tear you apart. I wrote in more black books than all my rap hooks. My tag got that style, that like grace and that look. But wait, I'm walking out the store with racks of paint. And if you think I paid for my ass for my ain't. My hands all inked up, the cops they think what? Me and a can of paint and a
drink. My next guest, Dan Lish, is a true artist. He's a senior concept artist for the video game industry in London, but he's also blessed the world with a project called Ego Strip. Ego Strip is a project that started on Dan's commute to work on the train and his illustrations of iconic hip-hop artists. Dan, I want to welcome you to The Library with Tim Heinenkel on rapstation.com. Welcome, man.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the and honored to be here.
So I want to start, you know, obviously we're in this political climate, and I feel like every year, you know, I feel like there's always this like push to by politicians to get rid of the arts. And that had me thinking about your work, and I want to know, how did you actually get started? And then was it like a natural thing? Did you, were you pushed for it? But then also, once you discovered you had this gift, did somebody foster it, or was it like on your own?
You know, I was lucky that I had, when my parents were together, they were very encouraging. And, you know, they pushed that creativity in me because they saw that I was naturally drawn to that. You know, I would either be, you know, roaming around in fields looking for animals or something, or just with my head in a sketch pad. And my father, you know, he really encouraged me. He got me specific pens and it guided me. My mother was quite artistic on her side of the family. So it was a natural thing. I just fell into it. And I guess being a bit of a daydreamer as well, that was a good excuse and a good habit, really, just to embrace or be in that bubble of creativity and just explore these worlds, you know, the inner worlds, I guess. Especially when times, you know, they get a bit rough sometimes, the up and downs of life. I wouldn't say it's a direct escapism, but it's sort of therapeutic, and it's just a lovely place to be, you know, being in that creative zone. You know, I don't want to get too cosmic, but you know what I mean, just sort of in the sort of zone, your connection with a higher source, maybe. You know, I know it's crazy because where I get inspiration from, sometimes I don't really know.
So was this when you were growing up, and you had this encouragement from your family, your parents? Mm-hmm. Was there any? I mean, I imagine this, and I don't want to. You know, I imagine Dan at school, kind of teachers talking, you zoning out, probably doing amazing artwork, right? Or just sketching, and then getting in trouble for it?
Yeah, sometimes. So, I mean, it depends where you strategically sit. If you're in the back of the class, you get away with a lot more, you know, and everyone wants to be at the back of the class, I would suggest. I mean, yeah, you opened up a big topic there about schooling, quote unquote, you know, so I didn't really get along with it too well. But yeah, I don't want to get off the subject, but yeah, it happened now and again. I just wanted to get the hell out of school, to be honest, and just explore this world around us as much as I could.
So when you were, when you started to explore the world, how did you fall into, you know, these illustrations of blending hip-hop legends and the fantasy world?
Well, this happened a lot longer, you know, down the road. I mean, I went through the usual you know, in the UK, we sort of got that proverbial hip hop package of all the elements, you know, through Zulu, through Wild Style, through Rocksteady Tour, you know, all this stuff and certain documentaries. So that in the early 80s, 82, 83. So I was like from the first generation of that. So, I mean, cut a long story short, 30 plus years later, and coming back from New York, going to England, having a family, being more mature, and also getting into more the spiritual side, the inner workings of human existence, it very organically happened. And this is basically being, like I say, going to work on to London from the south coast of England to London. I'm drawing, and these things, they happen very organically, you know. Obviously, there was a bit of an intention there because it was originally through Rakim bigging up one of my pieces that I did for my late great friend, break DJ Lacey, who put out these iconic breakbeat albums. So I did the cover for that. And a lot of heads were just, it went around the world quite viral and became quite a cult image. And I thought, well, as a thank you, I'm going to do a little portrait, a little homage to Rakim. They just started with Paradise Grey as well out of the X-Clan. And just giving them, doing little sketches of them, but being very present in the moment and none of the ego thing, which is synonymous to hip hop and like B-boy type bravado, you know? So I was, but I sort of figured that out a bit later on, but what I'm getting at, so I did these little things and they became, you know, they did really well, you know? And I thought, well, I'm onto something here. This is, everyone likes a pat on the back, so.
Right.
And especially if you're you want to become a self-sufficient artist, I thought, yeah, I've touched on something here, so I'm going to explore it a bit more. So that's how it happened. So I'm rambling on a bit, but it was definitely a progression going through the battle mentality, putting myself on the front line in hip hop. This is more regards to the b-boying aspect, up rocking, and graffiti. And then getting all that out of my system, then I'm in my sort of late 30s, early 40s, having a family, and I can look back, you know, as sort of stepping outside of that and then looking in with my knowledge and the experiences I've had with a more mature ear and eye. And a lot of these little subconscious things, they sort of manifest when I'm doing my pen. My drawings are usually penned straight to paper. It's not really working out. It's freestyle crafting then and there on a wobbly train. That's, you know what I mean? So yeah. It's very spontaneous. And that's the whole joy of it. I'm still really enjoying the journey and the process, which is very important for an artist.
I think one of the things that's really fascinating to me is that you come up with original concepts for your pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that because you're doing it. Your subject matters are artists themselves, and these artists, these MCs, these producers, these DJs, they've kind of already presented themselves to the world with their own artistic interpretation.
Yeah.
And then you're kind of representing them with your own, you know, artistic interpretation. So I guess how much of what they presented already, what these artists have already presented to the world, how much do you take into account when creating your pieces like that?
That's a good question, because it boils down to three or four. How can I explain it? If I can categorize the process, first it'll start with, who am I intrigued by, inspired by, that really, you know, rocked me to the core, that I would go out, spend my hard-earned money on their music, go to see them at jams, you know, share their music between my friends, you know, and even if that was 20, 30 years ago, they've still left, you know, because time is a funny thing, and it sort of, things resonate with you for your whole life. Mm-hmm. You listen to one tune again, and it takes you back to when you're 12 years old,
right.
Even if you're like, you know, 52 or something. So I sort of picked artists that really resonated with me for all the years. I'll write a little list down. And then I'll try and being very familiar with their music as well. It mainly starts with that. If I'm very familiar with their music, or again, it's perception and my interpretation of it, you know, because it's coming from basically an Anglo-European perception of it. But as a lover of hip hop, you know, so it's quite a broad question, that one, but it depends as well, because some characters I'm quite intrigued with, although I might not listen to a lot of their music.
Right.
But I would definitely say it has to come from the love, the inspiration, the intrigue, and how I can flip it, or how I can make a suggestion that of the power of their music, but I might trying to manifest that into something tangible. Like, there's a lot of speakers with little faces on, and there's lots of, you know, say like with Ultramagnetic MCs, the first one that comes into my head, I put them on the back of this Rhino that was sort of mixed with a sort of tape deck, sort of studio, sort of crazy laboratory, but this charging Rhino, because that was the impact they had on me when I was a youth. Their music just blew my head off. So I'm trying to use these visual metaphors, which is quite a big thing, that I use a lot of analogies and metaphors and have little side narratives going through these illustrations as well. And I'll use quite a bit of symbolism when I can, because I might be listening to some crazy podcast that is very alternative and you have to be quite open-minded. And that also might affect that illustration that day as well. It's a huge, huge question, because everyone, I've done over 100 of these now over the last couple of years. And everyone, I would say, is different in my initial interpretation of it. I'll try and keep to a theme that I feel that, you know, like with Premier, he's sort of, he said, like, I'm a nerd. I sort of love my vinyl, my wax. He's like a crazy sort of professor in his lab knocking out these amazing beats. So I can play with that. It's easier for me to play with, say, crews like Far Side, like visually, Far Side, or, you know, the Native Tongues are quite easy, because, you know, they're quite playful in their imagery and their lyrics as well. So that gives me a lot more of what I can play with. With PE, with Public Enemy, I remember I heard this interview when I was about 17, and there was this cat from New York, I can't remember, Bones Malone, was that, maybe that was him, I can't remember, but he said, yeah, PE, they just entered hip-hop on this black cloud, you know, always, you know, this huge black cloud, and there was a rumble across New York or something like that, and that's my sort of remembering. It might be wrong, but that's what sort of stayed in my head. So I thought, yeah, you know, I'm going to do like a huge flotilla just with Flavor, you know, just buzzing around like he does, you know, just like aggravating shit, you know what I mean, just sort of like and Chuck and everyone there, and put the, you know, Hank Shockley in his floating laboratory, pushing buttons and pulling levers. So I just, the main thing is that I'm playing around. I'm not too caught up in trying to impress the people that I'm drawing, because that's the whole reason for it. It's ego strip. You're taking that away and you're embracing that inner child and that play in creativity. And also it's a multi-layered sandwich. It's giving love back to them as well, as individuals, creative human beings, as we all are. It's just how we tap into it.
How much of the... You talked about, you know, inspirations, you know, like hearing someone say something about PE, or, you know, listening to a podcast, but how much, how much do you ever go back and, I guess, listen to the discography or a track that you really remember, of the artist or the subject that you're painting at the time or drawing at the time?
Well, that definitely helps. I mean, sometimes I'll be listening to the craziest music that has nothing to do with the artist, but occasionally, I'd say more than 50%, I will listen to those iconic tunes that have really resonated over the years. You know, I mean, nothing comes to mind right now, but of a certain crew or anything. But yeah, okay. Like, you know, the Pete Rock, PE, Flash. I'll be listening to some iconic jams that that pop into my mind. And it might only be two, like with Pete Rock Seal Smooth. It was a Straight and Out remix with the horns and the bass line that has lasted for me, as well as, you know, that first EP All Sold Out, those jams as well. And with maybe with some of them, like Black Sheep, it was The Choice Is Yours. That was the only jam. I listened to the whole album, but the one that I kept on going back to during that train ride was The Choice Is Yours. And, you know, it has a multi-layered meaning for me. Also, you know, me hanging out with my boys back in the day as well, just messing around, and that tune was playing a lot. So, it depends, you know, but it's mainly a couple of iconic tunes. Sometimes I don't need to at all. I just know what I'm going to do. Scribble out a little thumbnail rough. Especially if it's a big crew piece, if there's more than five members, it takes a little bit more planning. But yeah, sorry, I'm rambling a bit, but answered your question.
I think what also is interesting is that you talk about these kind of, these are, it sounds like you're saying that these are legends, or these are artists that you kind of, you know, brings you back to your youth, right? But have there ever been moments where you, let's say you have a plan to kind of draw or do a piece of an artist, and you remember him or her, you know, in your youth and what you were listening to when you first heard them, and then, but now as an adult, you've kind of gone back and, hey, I'm going to listen to this track again, and obviously it means something different because you're at a different point in your life, and then that happens and you have to kind of totally rework the piece, or do you try to still stick with your initial plan for the piece?
That really doesn't have an effect, to be honest. And that there might be records that they did a while ago, or maybe the lyrical content I'm not really into as much, but it doesn't really have that effect on me. You know, I just appreciate it. It's in a little capsule of this time where I can just nip in and out, and it still has that effect that it did back in the day, you know? I don't know. It's a funny question, because sometimes the subtleties that you overlook, years later, you'll pick back up on them again, and you think you would have forgotten them. With me, anyway, I'll remember the tiniest little silly detail of things,
right,
and sort of focus in on that. Not visually, but, you know, sound-wise as well, and that feeling. And even, like I say before, I know I said this previously, but it might have been, honestly, 15, 20 years, and I haven't heard the music or these specific, you know, records for a long time. And as soon as I press play, you know, then I'm right there again.
Right.
It's interesting how it has that effect.
You know, you've obviously, like you mentioned, you've done over 100 pieces, and, you know, you've done Eric B. and Rakim, KRS-One, Beastie Boys, Public Enemy, Questlove, Pete Rock, Premier, and more. Mm-hmm. But you also, you have a print of the late J. Dilla. For you, you know, and there's a lot of stories about J. Dilla. Like, people, the most common one, I feel, is that people don't realize they're listening to J. Dilla, or mm-hmm. how much of an effect J. Dilla actually had on their upbringing until they tell them. So I was curious, when did you first discover his music, and were you also kind of, are you in the boat, like with most of us or some of us, that you didn't realize you were hearing him until he passed, or until much later in the game?
Yeah, that was definitely in there as well. I didn't realize how much of an effect he had, because I'm a bit, if there's a lot of hype on something, I'll intentionally turn the other way, you know. It just, so I know when he passed, everyone was just, going crazy, playing his style. There was Nights Dedicated, which I can understand that, but I sort of shied away from it a bit because I had a lot of respect for his craft. But I didn't really get too caught up in that, and so I had to wait a good, you know, 5, 6, 7 years before, you know, I started getting started listening to it again. I don't know, it was just all a lot of the hype and craziness. I just shied away from it, I think. I definitely, the more I went back, I was like, damn, you know, he's done so much. And it has lasted the test of time. And he's releasing so many of the mixtapes and all his beats and stuff like that. And half of them I'd like, half of them I wouldn't, but, you know, just being fussy. but it definitely had an effect.
Do you remember which kind of Dilla beat that by Dilla you've obviously heard but didn't remember here, didn't know it was him? And do you remember what beat that was that you really liked, or you just kind of?
It was on Quest's album. There was quite a few on there, not really naming specifics. Also, even Far Side as well. Like, what was it? Because my memory fades. I tell you, I've been a bit dyslexic as well. I'm really crap at remembering the names nowadays. Visuals is fine, but I forget names. But there's some joints on Far Side, second album. I was never really listening to Slum Village that much until it was on this. I used to go to the Sound Library. Do you remember that record shop on First Avenue? It was, you get a lot of producers and diggers go in there. It was a wicked shop.
No.
Yeah. So basically, I picked up this tape from there because this was all those CDs. People, for some reason, a lot of hip hop heads, especially some B boys, we were still playing around with tapes. Anyway, I got this tape from there, and this was in about 2003 or 2004, and it had some Dilla instrumentals and Slum Village stuff mixed in with jazz and stuff like that. And I loved it because I used to cut people's hair as well, so I used to stick that on while I was cutting hair.
Oh wow.
And I used to love it, man. I just I didn't realize that maybe that answers your question. It was on a tape and I didn't realize that the effect that it had, and when the DJ was playing the originals that he sampled as well, that really helped, because, you know, being a bit of a digger and a DJ as well, I really appreciated that. Joining the dots, basically.
You're obviously, when you do these pieces, you're obviously familiar with the artist. But I want to know: do you have to be familiar with the MC or the DJ prior to working with them?
It does help. Does really help. It is a bit of a struggle. Again, I have to just shake it off. I'm intrigued by this person. I'm just going to mess with it and see what happens. And sometimes they work better than others, but it definitely helps.
Is there something, let's say you're not familiar with them and they, you know, they send music to you, or, you know, are you talking to them? Is there something that you're looking for, like flow, content, lyrics, music, style, beat, to make you, you know, say, okay, I could give them a chance.
Yeah, it's difficult because they might be a really nice person, you know, very humble and righteous and just a good person. And the music, I might not be feeling it that much. But I guess you're talking about other, you know, working on things that, you know, album covers and stuff like that. This is after the series sort of blew up and stuff, but. It can be a challenge sometimes, but I try and connect with, you know, their general vibe. I know it's I'm not really explaining it very well, but some things I'm not really that into, but that's just because my taste has matured, like, you know, like wine, I guess. I know it's a bit corny, but... It's a natural process. You're going to gravitate towards certain things because of that emotional effect it had on you at a specific time. And you've just naturally grown that way. And so I can't force myself to like something when the lyrical content might be a bit crap, or the beats, I'm not really feeling the whole vibe. But that person might be really nice. That's mainly... to contemporary artists that I'm not really familiar with that have gotten in contact with me to maybe do a project, but that doesn't really occur with the general ego strip,
right? Yeah, I mean, right, and that's what I meant. I meant that you've been contracted or whatever. They've been reached out. Artists have reached out to you to do artwork for their albums. And obviously you're doing the artwork for Raekwon's new album, or did the artwork for Raekwon's new album. So that also had, like, are you, you know, in the age of downloading albums, are you surprised that people are reaching out in terms of wanting this album artwork? And then why do you think artists want to keep the tradition of kind of great album artwork alive?
I think that's, again, it's a multi-layered answer. Me being, you know, a vinyl head at a certain point in my life, I really appreciate the craft on an album cover instead of, sometimes back in the day, you wouldn't even get a picture on the cover. You'd just get a white or black sleeve with a sticker on it.
Right.
And I was like, oh, okay. It didn't really bother me too much, because if the tune was like, oh man, this, you know, I've been hunting this, or I'm really looking forward to, you know, breaking the seal on this. Because, you know, I remember we used to get a lot of imports. Obviously, it was imports, you know, right, from America. So it cost a little bit more. And sometimes it had that mystique over it, especially if it didn't have a cover. But what I'm getting at, I suppose, through the genre of vinyl and the huge history it has, that was just a very special thing. It's tangible, tactile. You had it in your hand. You could sniff it. You could... just appreciate the album, especially if it was gatefold and you had the inner sleeves and all that. So I think that's just carried on through this digital age of you can't touch shit. You know what I mean? And it's really annoying sometimes. And you know, it's sometimes a bit soulless. So I think the craft shines through, even if it's a digital image. It's not, and not taking away nothing from the people that do vector art, you know, like working in Illustrator when it's quite stiff.
Right.
And a lot of stuff looks like it's just been copied or traced or something. When there's that human element, it goes quite deep, I guess. It's that human element of pen touching paper or paintbrush touching a surface. You know, it's human, it's tangible, you know, there's mistakes in there. You know what I mean? It's just that very human, I can't explain myself anymore. I think that's why people still reach out, because and maybe, you know, not getting too deep, maybe they like the stuff, but it looks fun.
Yeah.
And a bit different. But it's also got that old school sort of flavor where it's a bit sort of comic booky, children's book illustration type thing. Maybe that as well. I'm just jumping, you know, around a bit, but that might be it. Who knows?
How did you're doing Raekwon, you did Raekwon's seventh album, it's The Wild. How did that collaboration come about? I mean, you reached out to him, he reached out to you, and then...
It was the other way around, man. I tell you, that a big piece of humble pie for me. It was amazing. He reached out to me, which is great.
That's amazing.
He said, yeah, he was like, peace, Dan, this is Raekwon from Wu-Tang. I need to call you. Just call me ASAP. And I was just like a giggly little 12-year-old. Well, my perception of myself at the time. I mean, I kept pretty chill and everything, but... I was like, man, this is crazy. So I called him up, and he's just a really, really nice guy to work with. You know, he had a lot of love and respect for the craft, as I do for his craft. And to be honest, his manager, I think, got in contact with me about a year and a half ago. And I said, what was he like on the off chart? Just interested in seeing, you know, what made him. And he really liked the Cool Herc and the Nina Simone one I did.
Hmm.
And then when I did that Wu-Tang one with the multiple heads on the body, that sort of knocked his socks off as well. And he just got in contact, and, you know, that was great, man. It was really cool, and a pleasure to work with him as well. he definitely had a vision and he stuck to it, but he was still very, encouraging for me to explore themes. And it was brilliant working with him. And I knew I had to do a good job because, he only expects greatness, Yeah. So I had to really, work hard doing that one. I made sure the original was very large as well because, hopefully the album is going to be, amazing and it's going to do well. And I'll have something tactile to maybe, sell at a later date. That's the thing with digital stuff, man. You can't really shift it at a later date. You can't really show it at a gallery show, I mean, you can have like a print, but it's not the same as the original, with the dirt and the ink splats on it and the tea stains or whatever.
Right,
I've gone off on a tangent, but yeah, that was great, man. That was really good.
So is that, when you're collaborating with him, are you, sorry if this sounds like a dumb question, but are you in studio with him or is it just like, emailing images or drafts, I guess, kind of back and forth?
You're going to find this quite funny, but this was through Instagram and WhatsApp and trying to claw. I mean, at one point, with all due respect, I had to say, man, look, you got to give me more direction because it's getting a bit cryptic. So we had to go through that hump of finding or getting to the source of the idea and his vision. And then I could just let loose and my imagination, I could add things and put my own flavor to it.
And this is like you haven't heard the album.
Nope.
So this is
A lot of the time cats send me tracks just to get flavor I'd say 50-50, but this, I haven't heard anything, nothing.
Right, because I mean, to me, I'm looking at your Twitter account, I'm looking at the album cover, and it's called The Wild. So, for someone who does not have any artistic talent whatsoever, me, I see it. It's like it's the Wild. Like he's Raekwon, and the sound. This is like what if I was to envision a city that just went crazy wild, so to say. Yeah. This would be it. So you're basing the artwork of talking to him, but then also kind of the name of the album as well.
Yeah. Well, I think I should be able to say this, but, originally the whole process is like, he got in contact. We had a chat, just picked each other up and just had a good chat. It was cool. And obviously I'm very sort of humbled by him getting in contact, so I'm like, yes sir, no sir, sort of thing. No, it was cool. He gave me the initial idea, like he wanted sort of like time. He wanted to go back to sort of like more, not like his battle raps, but more the stuff back in the day where he was known for the rawness and dope lyrics and everything. And it's called The Wild. He wanted to like be like a huge silverback gorilla in the middle of Times Square, but Times Square has to look like a jungle, but like post-apocalyptic type thing, and everything's going crazy, like just chimps swinging about and anthropomorphized animals to humans.
Right.
Yeah, so just all these animal characters going crazy, but yeah, like I say, originally is a silverback, and then I thought, right, I'm going to put a V-bomber goose down because he used to talk about his bubble vest and all that stuff. So I put that in there, his Clark Wallabies. And then I thought just for a good, just to flip it a little bit, I'd put the Staten Island Ferry, like he'd just been dumped. He'd like had it under his arm, stomping through the city and just dumped it. And then maybe plugged his microphone into the side, like it was an amp or something like that, just getting ready to rock or something. Or it doesn't even have to have a reason, really, but it just looked funny, so I popped that in there. And he said, no, it's not really happening. Why don't you morph my face, half me, half the gorilla? So we did that, and he loved it. And I thought, yeah, we're getting somewhere. So then he must have taken it back to his people, and they didn't go for it. Maybe they said, look, it's that guerrilla thing. Do you know what I mean? It's not good for what, you know what I mean? All that stuff. So it's, and then I can understand that. So we scrapped that, went straight to, you know, his regular face. And I gave him slightly orange eyes, so give it that sort of like that beast sort of within type thing, you know, that rawness.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a lot of fun. Then me having sort of carte blanche to create these other characters in the foreground and the perspective as well. That's quite hard because I drew Times Square out and it wasn't really working. So I've only just learned how to mess with 3D stuff. So I actually created Times Square in Maya and rotated it, the city around, so I could choose a position. Then I took a screenshot of that, and then that helped me get the shot right. And then I scanned in the ink drawing and popped him in the middle. And then I had to redraw the whole thing again. So, yeah, because originally he said, yeah, that's good. Put the title on it, the parental advisory sticker, and we're done. I said, no, hang on a minute. This is the rough. I haven't done it yet. He said, okay, right. So then I had to spend another week, you know, in between work and everything, doing the whole illustration again. But I didn't mind though, because I knew it was going to be worth it.
I'm going to jump a little bit, but you know, so obviously the Raekwon on the Wild album covers, it's color, but then you also do pieces in black and white. How do you decide which pieces, I mean, how do you know like which pieces you work in color and which will be in black and white? And then is there a message or a purpose that maybe black and white brings to a piece that color just can't, or vice versa?
Well, I try to color every piece. I've got the black and white is strong on its own, but I feel that then I can explore and play around again with the color and see where that goes. And I might be able to, a lot of the time, I try and get a lot of depth in my work, and sometimes with the ink pen, it's not giving that as much depth as I'd like. So I can scan the original ink work and then color it in Photoshop. But I suppose if I had the time and things were a bit different, then I would do it 100% traditional. But it would take a lot longer. But yeah, the black and white, I think they hold by themselves. It's just that I can maybe try and experiment and do something else when it's the colour. It's just nice to see what happens. I think there's only about 2 or 3 pieces out of the 100 that I haven't coloured.
Yeah, there's like I can't find it now, but I'm on your Twitter account.
Dan Lish one,
and there was a piece that was in black and white, and then I think you wrote something like hashtag color coming soon or something like that.
Yeah,
and then I was like, "Why?"
because
it's just like, you know. I mean, I think just when I look at visuals, I think color. I mean, black color is powerful, and black and white is just as powerful.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, eventually I'm going to do a book, and I'll probably have you know, black and white on one side, color on the other, and try and have them in their original size, because the first year, and I've jumped off the subject a bit. The first year I was taking my little black sketchbook on the train. I don't know if you know the sizes in the US, but in England there's A5, A4, A3, A2. A5 is about, these are specific paper sizes. A5 is about, I think it's 5 inches by 8 inches. So they're quite small. I had this little black sketchbook with me that was very portable, so I could just use that. So all the first ones, the first probably 30 or 40, they're all pretty small. So when I get to exhibit them, people are quite surprised on how small they are. And when I started getting to the crews, then I had to go a bit larger, just because, you know, I don't want to piss off the rest of the people sitting on the train with me getting all expressive with my big you know, a big ass sketchbook that is like 25 inches across, and, you know, because I'll be taking up two seats. And that has happened, actually, because I took the Raekwon. You know, that's pretty big, and that's exactly what I did. But because our trains are so pretty crap in this country, especially with the amount of strikes and everything, I've just been going straight into first class, to be honest.
Right.
And, you know, you get a lot more room there. And if I get kicked out, so be it. But that hasn't happened yet. I'm getting myself into trouble, I'm sure of it.
Dan, I know it's late, so I don't want to keep you up too longer, but one more question. How do you, with all the artwork you've done with the Ego Strip, with even starting to or creating album covers for hip hop artists, how do you view yourself, kind of your role within the culture of hip hop? Do you think you're a part of it, you're just a contributor to it, or are you something else?
I would say all of those, really. Like, you know, all right, I'm not going to get all cryptic. I'll just answer goddamn question. Like, I'm all of those, man, and you just don't understand me, you know. A documentarian, that could be part of it. I was on the front line, I would say, battling in New York, doing my thing, you know, just that raw, proper hip hop, you know, the competition, so I was, I guess, and still am in a way, because some artists have, it's very humbling that they've said, look, you know, you've brought something, you brought another layer to it, you know, I can't really explain it, because it should be coming out of their mouth, not mine, because I'm not very good at reinterpreting or remembering really what has been said. But it's a nice thing to do. It's sort of not coming of age. It's sort of like from a mature perspective of someone who has to have gone through all these experiences to come out the other end and then relay that back down on paper in a very sort of natural way. It's not forced. And like the essence of hip hop should be, really, you know, when people first started picking up the mic, and it was a natural thing. It wasn't too forced, you know, like, right, I have to write this rhyme now because this LP is needed and this label's, you know, really biting at my ankles to get it done.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? There's no agenda. It's maybe that has something to do with it as well. It's quite a vast question, again, you've asked, so I hope I've answered it.
No.
That's huge. We could just go on and on with that, but I think I've answered that.
Yeah, no, you did. Dan Lish, great artist. Thank you so much. He did the cover for Raekwon's newest album, The Wild. He's done a bunch of other artwork that's amazing. Ego Strip, check him out. Dan, thank you so much for joining me on The Library with Tim Einikel on rapstation.com.
Thank you, Tim. Much appreciated. I reminisce days wearing all black, pain in my knapsack. Summer squash, yellow calling me, I had to rack that. Freaking forward inside, working the outline. Late make a strip shine, nigga, I take mine. Tags on the J-line, E-train tunnels, flat blacks, got stacks, fat caps, spotter bundles, it was like that. Take my spot, I'll be right back. Hand styles, they major, stomp blocks in Asia. My rustos and labor, about to give birth to flavor. Vandal squad cops play blocks in a La Sabre, trying to catch niggas, great. They name looking for fame. Sometimes you get locked, it's just part of the game. Antifreeze in my Griffin, I was making a stain. First car to the back of the train, simple and plain. Wrecking rack spot, shutting them down, leaving them slain. Real talk, sun graph on the brain, it was insane. Nah, man. Yo, I can see.
still smell the paint in the air like I was there. I used to ride the 7 train way back and just stare at the colors on the roof. Pale yellow was the shit. Everybody wildin' out, anybody was a fit. Pile of marker in my pocket, everything was getting hit. When you come through correct, your whole staff get big. Triple outline, taking my time to look crisp. Can't control, crushing calm, straight stomp, we don't miss. Four finger chips, street cry lines like full clips. Kill something, spray it past the weapon, keep stepping. Niggas know my style, still repping, no question. I drop a lot of jewels when I rhyme, so pay attention. In New York, we make walls talk free expression. Beyond comprehension of the regular is deeper. Pain in my pocket, fat cap in my sneaker. Late night on a mission for self, I got the fever. Got the rushing as I see a transit cop coming. Now I start running, hop the suit, drop the paint, hop the roof, slip, fell, got myself my left hand leaking. I'm not trying to go to Central Bookings for the weekend. I'm moving like a marathon winner, never a quitter. Big chasing me for bullshit, I'm wondering why they bitter. So I go left, go right, go left, hit the ass, run around the corner and I hop into a cab. Now I'm moving, got away, close call, still bleeding, shirt ripped, scuff kicks, out of shape, heavy breathing, not discouraged on my mission. Never that, I'm still proceeding, doing spots like an evening. Monday to the weekend, reach to all the writers, catching tags every evening. Spot seeming hot, gleaming, permy walls on forever shit. Drop bombs like 7 million Arab rebel terrorists. One love coming from a spray paint specialist, you heard?